Okay, turn to Genesis chapter 18. We pretty much finished up chapter 17 last week. Remember last week, God comes to Abraham, or Abram. His name just gets changed to Abraham, so I'm going to call him Abram even then. And says, again, I'm going to give you, make a great nation of you. You're going to have many generations after you. Your seed is going to be multiplied. And then this land, again, he promises them again, this land is going to be yours. He implements circumcision as a sign of this covenant between him. We saw that God used that term, everlasting covenant, three times as he spoke to Abraham and used the word covenant in chapter 17. I don't remember how many times it was. It was quite a few. I think it was 13. You're right. That God made this covenant with Abraham that God would fulfill. We also saw that he said specifically to Abraham, Sarah will have a son, Ishmael, who was, remember how old he was by now? 13, that same number, 13. That 13-year-old son that you have for approximately 13 years been figuring that he is your heir and going to be the one that God is going to make his covenant with, God says, you're wrong. It's not with him. It's going to be with your other son, Isaac. And we talked about what Abram might have been thinking at that point. I mean, he's had 13 years that he's raised and had this son with him that he thought was going to be his heir. And then God says, nope, this is not the son that's going to be your heir. And what Abram might have thought until then. and then we see at times Abraham does what God wants him to do right away and doesn't have a problem. And we see that with the circumcision. It says, and right away Abraham obeyed and completed that task that God had given him to do. As you stop and think about that, all the males, all the kids, all the adults had to go through this circumcision. That would have meant that you would have to be convinced, right, that this was of God, and to be part of that covenant, you would have to submit to this taking place. Right? I mean, we're not talking about something that's simple here. So each of those individuals, I was thinking about this, each of those individuals had to make that commitment to allow this to be done, to be part of the covenant. And I couldn't help but think that God desires, we didn't talk about this last week, but before we continue, God desires of us to make a commitment, right? As well, as Christians, not a physical commitment like they had to do, but more in a spiritual sense. God desires a commitment from us as well, that he might fulfill the covenant or promises that he's made to us. And again, God is the one that is going to fulfill this covenant here as well as in our lives, but to have the complete, what would you say, maybe enjoyment of that, it's dependent upon us. In other words, Abraham had to submit and obey, and all these individuals had to do the same thing. We have to do the same thing, commit and obey. If we don't, that doesn't mean that God won't accomplish his tasks. He will. But we don't get to enjoy the fullness of that relationship because we failed on our end. It doesn't mean that God won't accomplish his task, just like with Abraham. But as far as Abraham being able to enjoy the completeness of that fulfillment, same with us, we have a responsibility as well. So we see this picture in Abraham. Okay, That's the end of verse or chapter 17. We go on to chapter 18 and we see something else taking place. It says, verse 1, and the Lord appeared unto him in the plains of Mamre, and he sat in the tent door in the heat of the day. And he lifted up his eyes, and lo, three men stood by him. And when he saw them, he ran to meet them from the tent and the door and bowed himself toward the ground. The Lord has appeared to Abraham before, right? When he was Abram. Two or three times, actually, in chapter 12 and chapter 17. In each of those chapters, two different times it says, and the Lord appeared to Abram or Abraham. This time the circumstances seem to be a little bit different in how he appears to him. I don't know specifically. Scripture doesn't tell us exactly how God appeared to Abraham prior to this. We know that at one point it was in a vision, but these other times it doesn't exactly tell us how he appeared or what Abraham saw, but we know that God communicated with him. He's in the plains of Mamre. Do you know where that is? Or what we've heard about this place before. What have we heard about where he's at? It's in Canaan, yep. We see it in chapter 13 and chapter 14 a couple of times. Here, chapter 18. This is where he is settled, in this plain. Actually, it's right in this area where... Yes, yes. In the future, this is where Sarah is buried, in this same area. So this is where he lives. It says in the plains of Mamre. It can also have to do with the trees, terebinth trees. It talks about that as well. We'll see the mention of trees here in a minute. When I think of a plain, I think of just, you know, grassland or something. But really a plain is just a flat area, right? So it doesn't mean there couldn't have been trees. Interesting here, if you think about this, he sat in the tent door in the heat of the day. That's interesting. Have you ever been in a tent in the middle of the day when it's hot? That's what I was thinking too. Yeah. More than likely it's a canvas tent or a heavy kind of tent. What, wool? Yep, or out of skins, whatever it was. If you've ever been camping in a tent in the heat of the day, you know, the last place you want to be in the heat of the day is in the tent. So that's why he's sitting in the doorway, because at least in the doorway you get what? Some breeze blowing by. So he's probably, yeah, shade as well. That's the other thing I was thinking. Two things, shade and a little breeze. It's in the heat of the day, and their custom was when it gets hot in the middle of the day, what do?
Rest.
You rest, exactly. Work in the morning, rest in the heat of the day, and then work in the afternoon. Yeah, many places still do that because we don't have to here because we don't deal with that kind of heat, although sometimes it feels hotter some summers than others. But so that was their custom. So as he rested in the tent, trying to cool off in the heat of the day, it says he lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, three men stood standing by him. And he saw them. We'll read part of this narrative and then come back and talk. So he saw them, he ran to meet them from his tent and bowed himself toward them and said, my Lord, if now I have found favor in thy sight, pass not away, I pray thee, from thy servant. Let a little water, I pray you, be fetched, and wash your feet, and rest yourselves under the tree. Tree. So there was trees around there. And I will fetch a morsel of bread and comfort you, your hearts, after ye shall pass on, for therefore ye are come to your servant. And they said, so do as thou hast said. So basically he's saying he sees these three individuals and says, come, take a rest. We'd say, take a load off, sit down, take a break, take it easy. Get some water, wash your feet, relax, refresh yourself. He says, I'll get you something to eat and take your comfort. Don't leave, you know, until we've had a chance to sit down. Now, this might be, I know that that's part of the customs in that area. As you see strangers, you're to be hospitable, and that's just the way they are. I wonder if, as we continue on, Abraham had a feeling or knew at least who one of these three individuals were. Right. He uses that word, my Lord, which is not the small L-O-R-D, but a large L. So it's possible, it doesn't say so, but it's at least possible as far as I see it, that maybe Abraham understood who this was, or at least had a feeling who this was that he was entertaining, if you will. Let's continue on. It says, verse 6, and Abram hastened into the tent unto Sarah and said, make ready quickly 3 measures of fine meal, knead it, and make cakes upon the hearth. And Abram ran unto the herd and fetched a calf, tender and good, and gave it unto the young man, and he hastened to dress it. And he took butter and milk and the calf which was had dressed and set it before them, and he stood there by them under the tree, and they did eat. What do you see as I read those 3 verses? Actually,
time has passed.
Yes, there's one. How long does it take to make bread from flour? Bonnie Jo? All day.
That's like flat bread where they just mix it up and throw it on the side of a pan.
Right.
And it's cooked real quick.
Right, but still it's going to take a fair bit of time. Now,
dressing, cooking.
Right. So this is not, you know, we think, oh, okay, run in the house and, you know, we'll grab some snacks, you know, and, you know, give you something to eat. No, this had to take a period of time to get these preparations made. What else do you see in these verses?
He stood there waiting while they ate.
Right. He did that. Pardon me? Okay, there's a couple things. First, he stood there while they ate. Now, he was probably with them because it doesn't say he dressed the animal and he didn't bake the bread. So there was obviously some time involved there. I wonder what the conversation was between these three and Abraham.
The roads and the weather.
It was not important in the story or the Lord would have given it to us. We wonder things like that too.
Yeah. Right, right. What else do you see in there, though?
You see hasten, quickly.
Yep. I think 4 times. It says he ran, he hastened, yes. He hurried. This is why I think Abraham knew or had an inkling who this was. He was in a hurry, right? This wasn't, oh, yeah, just take your time. I think it shows importance to him, how important this was that he entertained or cared for or fed these individuals that came to him. Because he didn't just stroll into the kitchen and say, hey, Sarah, whenever you get a chance, throw on a couple pieces of bread. And just happened to walk out to the pasture and take, he hurried to get this done because it was important to him. Yes, yeah, I think that as well. He's trying to, yeah. Right, right, which, again, leads back to the fact that I think he had an idea who this was and his desire to take care of them. So what did he bring them? Milk, butter, and all this. So it wasn't exactly, you know what, I'm going to go to my cupboard and grab a couple of cookies and some crackers and maybe a little cheese and have a snack. He basically had prepared for them a feast, a complete meal for them to sit down. So again, this wasn't, I see the importance to Abraham of taking care of these individuals and not just half-heartedly, you know, bringing them something to eat to take care of them. We see the importance to Abraham of taking care of these. And then the time and effort and cost that it took to do that. Verse 9, and they said unto him, where is Sarah thy wife? And he said, behold, in the tent. So Sarah is not out with the men and Abraham as they're eating. She's still in the tent.
And I think in many cultures that was common.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she would have been probably in
the house.
somewhere else, yeah.
The men would be having their conversation.
Yeah, yep, exactly. so we don't know if Sarah actually had seen these three individuals. Let's continue on. And he said, behold, in the tent. And he said, now it's interesting here, verse 9 says, and they said unto him, so one or more of these three individuals said to Abraham, where is Sarah? But it says, and he said to him. So it seems to be a certain individual in these three. Again, he says later on that, verse 22 when we get there, and Abraham stood yet before the Lord. One of these individuals is pre-incarnate Christ. So here's an appearance of Christ prior to his incarnation. The other two were angels. We'll see that later on too. Specifically calls them angels. So more than likely it was one of the two or three asked for Sarah, and then Christ says to him, and he said, I will certainly return unto thee according to the time of life, and lo, Sarah, thy wife, shall have a son. And Sarah heard in the tent door which was behind him. So even though she wasn't out there amongst their conversation, she was close enough that she could hear. How soundproof is a tent? If you've ever camped, you know it's not soundproof at all. You might as well have nothing there. But she was close enough that she could hear what was going on out there, Pastor.
I think she made sure she was close enough. I think that's just part of human nature.
Yeah, I wonder what's going on out there, yeah. Yeah.
Curiosity. Mm-hmm. To be there. What are these men talking to my husband about?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's easily understandable.
Yep. Okay, let's continue on. So he says, I will certainly return unto thee according to the time of life, and lo, Sarah thy wife shall have a son. And Sarah heard in the tent door which was behind him. So his back apparently was to the tent, and Sarah heard this conversation. A little note here we see in verse 11, now Abraham and Sarah were old and well stricken in age. Approximately how old? 99. I think it's 89. So 99 and 89. And it says, and it ceased to be with Sarah after the manner of women. In other words, she was no longer childbearing. She had come to that point, passed her time in life, change in life, and no longer is childbearing. We'll talk about this in a minute. Therefore, Sarah laughed within herself, saying, after I am waxed old, shall I have pleasure, my Lord also being old. when she heard this, she laughed not out loud, and that's key to what goes on here. She laughed within herself. So she thought, are you kidding me? Look at how old I am. I'm going to have a son, and I've already been through the change of life. So she laughs within herself. I'm waxed old, and shall I have pleasure, my Lord being old also? and the Lord said unto Abraham, wherefore did Sarah laugh, saying, shall I of surety bear a child which am old? Interesting here, the Lord is standing with his back to the tent. She doesn't make a sound, and yet he says to Abraham, what's Sarah doing laughing? Not only did he know that she laughed within herself, he knew why. Because will I have a child when I'm old and past the point of being able to have children? And then he says, is anything too hard for the Lord? At the time appointed, I will return unto thee according to the time of life, and Sarah shall have a son. What do you think Sarah was thinking at this point?
Well, you can tell. The dialogue as it continues, she was scared.
Yeah. We'll read that and then we'll come back. And it says, verse 15, and Sarah denied, saying, I laugh not, for she was afraid. And he said, yea, but thou didst laugh. When Sarah heard the promise, I'll read a little bit. When Sarah heard this promise, she laughed within herself, not a laugh of joy like we saw Abraham laugh prior to, but a cynical laugh, more like, now you're talking about something that's impossible. It seems like Abraham would have told her about the promise in chapter 17, verse 19, you know, that God is going to provide a son for you, but Sarah's having a hard time dealing with that promise, and exactly how is this going to work? Because, you know what? God waited too long again. Waited too long, and now it can't happen the way he's saying it happened. I think Sarah's finding it extremely difficult. Go ahead.
The power of the Holy Spirit.
Yeah.
God's showing her and them who he is.
Mm-hmm.
And he knows what they think.
Right.
And then he told them flat out.
Yes, you did. So Sarah's got, that's got to be going through her mind as well. How did he know? Right?
He knows everything.
Huh? Right. He knows everything. But I don't know that Sarah knew, got the connection like Abraham did, who these individuals were. So she's got to be wondering, how did he know? And then what does she do? When you get caught in doing something wrong, the first thing you do is say, not me. Not me. It wasn't me. We got a little poster at our house. It's a ghost putting a peanut butter and jelly sandwich in the piano bench. And then mom is asking, who did this? And all the kids say, not me. You know, not me. That used to be the little thing around the house. Not me. Who did this? You know, who left this out here? And all the kids would say, not me. Well, somebody did. Even you, Mr. Not Me, whoever you are. And that's what she does. Isn't that what we do sometimes? We get caught doing something wrong, and the first instinct is to say, oh, it wasn't me. I didn't do that. Come on, admit it. You know that's how it happens. Oh, it wasn't me. I didn't do that. And yet the Lord comes back and says, oh, yes, you did. I know you did because I heard you. I lost some here. Interesting here. It says that he will return according to the time of life. Verse 10, and then he says it again. 14, there it is. And at the appointed time, I'll return unto thee according to the time of life. Now, this could mean maybe at a certain set time in the future, but I think she's talking about, because Sarah's talking about the fact that she's past that time in her life, that what he means is when that time has changed or when that circumstance has changed. In other words, what's God got to do here? Because he waited so long.
He will make her able to bear a child.
Right, which means he is going to change her physically within her body so that now she can bear children.
And at the time would be the 9 months normally taking for a child to come along.
Yes. So God has waited not too long for him, but he's waited too long, humanly speaking. Get the picture? Why does God wait so long sometimes? There's one. Pardon me? Yes. Right. To prove that it wasn't a fluke. It wasn't something that you can just explain away, humanly speaking, because God is going to perform a miracle here. He's going to do something that could not be done unless He was involved in this. Nobody can say, oh, well, yeah, it was just, you know, late in life they had a child. Nope. God made sure that the circumstances were such that it only could have been him. And you're right. It's also to test our faith. Sometimes we wonder, why in the world does God wait so long? Maybe, one, it's to test our faith. Two, it's because the circumstances aren't quite right for individuals to see God working without an excuse, without a reason, without it being able to be anything but God's hand working so that he obtains the glory for what takes place.
It's not a long time for God either.
Right. 1,000 years. Right. Right. Time frame doesn't matter to God, but circumstances do, and he works within those circumstances. So we see that taking place here. God's waited to that point. So the men, after this, verse 16, and the men rose up from thence and looked forward, looked toward Sodom. And Abram went with them to bring them on the way. So they get up when they're done eating. They start to head towards Sodom. And Abram walks with them for a period of time to get them on their way. And the Lord said, shall I hide from Abraham that thing which I do? Seeing that, we'll stop right there. It sounds like the way this is written that we'll have to talk about this next week. but we'll see God's working and as this story continues here. Hopefully this has been a challenge to us as we wait upon God for different things, different circumstances, even unspoken prayer requests that we have, and we wait for God to work in circumstances. Okay, Lord bless you this morning. You're dismissed.